everyone. The following is a direct message production. We're your direct link to your favorite stars.
It's hot. It's getting hot in here. Hello. Wow, you've gotten big.
Hello.
Man.
Works out too. She goes to our gym downstairs and she works out.
Adorable. I need just one of you. Just one. And I'd be like the happiest man in the world. You must make your father very proud.
Done. She knows that. Who's the princess? The princess, the boss.
And daddy's also the boss sometimes.
I have to settle for a Minikai. But you are special. Absolutely. Yeah, here's my little guy. He's chilling over here. Minikai, just hang out, right? Just hang out. This is not about you today. All right. Whoa! What's good? What's good? What's good? Well, we definitely want to welcome everybody. This is What's Up. It's your boy, K with the AKA Mr. Getting It Done, Kai Green. And I am joined by none other than Mr. Juan Diesel himself, the man, the myth, the legend. Welcome, seven-time champion, IFBB Pro, Juan Morell. Thank you for coming and being a part of our little broadcast today.
My pleasure, Connor.
I'm excited, man. This is like, this is, actually, we haven't spoken other than Instagram recently. I think the last time we got a chance to see each other face to face was maybe 3 years ago.
Been a while. I don't know if it was at Bev's gym or if it was in Brazil. I can't remember, but it's been a while.
Yeah, you know what? That's the last time we got a chance to talk and eat was in Brazil. And yeah, we got a chance to celebrate your birthday, as a matter of fact, with some cake.
Yes, it was on my birthday. Kai was victorious. I got second. I still felt victorious because I was like,
absolutely.
You. Next to you is like Nana, you know? I mean, you're one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time. One of the greatest bodybuilders of now. And it's your, man. I mean, and you know, you've always been very humble, but I mean, us New Yorkers look up to you a lot. And you know, you represent. They call me the king of New York, but I don't know.
But that's exactly the point. We definitely want to take a minute and pay respect to you, Juan. I mean, honestly, we've seen you grow and we've seen you come in this game and we see you still representing very, very, very hard. Right now, absolutely, we want to make sure that we acknowledge the king of New York. And you ain't gotta hide, you smile and wear that badge of honor very proudly. We want to get into that a little bit today. We wanna find out more about the king of New York and actually give other people an opportunity that get a chance to hear this podcast to learn more about you, the king of New York, AKA, you know, Juan Diesel. We want to take a minute, Mr. Morell, and try to bring these people into the fold. Let's let them know about you and where you come from. What brought you into bodybuilding?
What brought me into bodybuilding, like a lot of people, I kind of wanted a better chest. So I started, you know, doing push-ups and stuff like that. I kind of was, you know, I was doing a little bit of boxing, nothing serious. And I was kind of like getting into like finding my groove of something I wanted to do as a hobby. And kind of with the boxing, I started doing push-ups, you know, because with boxing, weight training and push-ups and stuff like that. And then I started getting into the magazines. I saw that, I just saw like the bodybuilders and these chests and these this and it's that. And I'm like, first I started looking at Arnold. I was like, oh my God, I need to get a chest like that. So I just kind of, you know, from there, I just wanted to make myself look like that. So it wasn't me trying to be a bodybuilder yet. It was just me trying to look good and just look right. I was already cut up. I had have a fast metabolism. So I was just ripped, but I didn't have no muscle. And then that's how I got into it. You know, I started doing that. And then I think 6 months into it, a few people started looking at me and they're like, you look crazy. And I don't know.
Crazy.
You work out, you know, you gain muscle. But I just gained muscle at a really fast rate.
Dude, I never realized that you were actually into boxing before bodybuilding. Why boxing?
I grew up in East New York. I grew up in the streets. I used to fight. You know how it is. You're from Brooklyn yourself, and you know, you grew up in these neighborhoods. You have to survive, and it was just always. So I just liked it to fight, you know. And you know, when I was younger, so it was a way to. It was fun. It was, you know, I actually was good at it, and it was just something that was fun, you know. And then after that, I just kind of got into working out and bodybuilding.
You did mention Brooklyn. I want to take people back a little bit. So when you say that, you know, you like to fight, what was the deal? What was going on at that time in your life? I imagine you were obviously a teenager. How old were you about then?
When I started bodybuilding, I mean, at that time, you know, I was young. I was 21. Not that young, like compared to a lot of people. But when I did my first, when I started working out, I was into that boxing. I started working out seriously at 22. And then I did my first show was 24 going on 25.
So, okay, if you were 24, 25 with taking bodybuilding seriously, then that would mean that if boxing came before that, then that would mean that that was a decision of a young man. How old were you exactly when you were very serious about boxing?
I was never really serious. It was just something I did for like 6 months, seven okay. months. I was always an athlete. I played a lot of handball growing up. I played basketball. So I lived in the handball courts. I played a lot. So I was always an athlete. So when I stopped playing handball, I kind of just, you know, like you, like an athlete, I try to find something else to do. So I kind of like, you know, I was thinking about becoming serious with boxing. You know, I started going to a training. My parents didn't want me to do it. Everybody in my family, like, no, don't do this. You know, like, they just were against the whole thing. So they weren't supportive of that. And I was like, I still was going to do it because it didn't matter. I wanted to do it. But when I found bodybuilding, that was like my real love. When I started working out, how I felt when I worked out was like no other. Like I felt like I would go to the gym and I would train 3-4 hours. I would come back at night. I just loved it. I fell in love with it. I didn't want to box anymore. So it was like, you know.
So question then. Talk to me. I want to find out about you as a young man, as a teenager that enjoyed working out and identifies yourself as always being an athlete, or always having athleticism somewhere in how you expressed yourself. A lot of times people see an athlete, see a bodybuilder, they think, oh, well, you just had great genetics from the beginning. You know, I want to give people an opportunity to have some insight into, tell me a little bit about the young man, the teenager, that was seeking to express himself in the idea of working out. Why?
Well,
what was that important to you?
At that age, I didn't work out. All I did was pretty much cardio, I played handball. I just loved it, man. I used to wake up, go to the park at noon, and I would stay there till like 8 o'clock playing games, you know. And it was just something that as a kid, you know, besides, there was not much to do. We just, you know, we'll hang out, go to the park, we hang out at the park, and we just played sports. And my thing was handball. I played a little bit of basketball, you know, but I played a lot of handball. And that was just something that I loved to do. And I even played in tournaments, you know, we played in tournaments and stuff like that. So, you know, it was fun. And then, again, even when I started bodybuilding, I was still playing handball, working out. So that would be like my cardio. And then when I got into bodybuilding serious at 25, it's when I decided that I can't do handball like that anymore because it's very dangerous with the shoulders and getting as much muscle. I wasn't able to play competitive as a handball player. So I have to decide, you know, like, am I going to keep playing handball or am I going to, you know, be a bodybuilder where now the cardio is supposed to be really low intensity, especially with somebody like myself who had a lot of problem gaining weight in the beginning. It was something that I had to like, in the beginning, I didn't do any cardio. So I had to cut out like all that stuff and decide to like, just focus on training and trying to eat McDonald's and all this crazy stuff to put on weight.
So that would mean that when you started training, you knew that something about this thing was going to be a benefit to you. benefit to your life. What was that? What did that feel like, and how did you know?
And you were similar in a lot of ways. You always say you throw out energy in the air. When I started working out, I have things that I have written and I have it saved from when I, not when I started working out, but around that time. But when I started competing, I wrote, this was 2007. I hadn't even compete yet. So I'm going to compete. I'm going to do well. I'm going to be a professional bodybuilder. I wrote a lot of stuff. I just saw it. I visualized it. And to me, I think the mind is very powerful. A lot of people don't realize how powerful the mind is. Like, I believed in myself since day one. People laughed at me in the gym when I first started going to the gym, working out and flexing because I had no muscle, you know, and stuff like that, you know. But when you put and you dedicate your mind to something, you can make any dream an accomplishment, you know. And you just have to believe in yourself when nobody believes in yourself, you know. Like, I worked hard, you know. I would go to the gym and train 5 hours a day, and I would train my clients. And for years, I had no life. For years, I didn't party. I didn't do anything but sleep, eat, train, sleep, eat, train, and work. Sleep, eat, train, and work. And, you know, and I got myself as a professional, became a good professional. You know, I might not be, you know, in your tier, but I made a name for myself, and I put the work in. You know, a lot of people, they don't believe in themselves. When you talk to a lot of people, they talk negative, they don't believe in themselves, and they don't, or even if they think they believe in themselves, they're not willing to put that work in that it takes. They don't, not willing to sacrifice, you know, and do what it takes to become successful.
Now, your accomplishment is tremendous. You have been able to go from having a concept of what it looks like to be successful if you were to really, you know, put your best foot forward and make it happen. And you were actually able to make it a reality by doing it. A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people will talk all day. But you didn't do that. You obviously have been able to decide what you wanted to do and move towards progressively doing the steps necessary to make that a reality. What I want to do is I want to take a minute, and I want to try to give the people a picture of what that looks like. Because a lot of times what happens is people will see you today as successful IFBB pro Juan Diesel Morel and say, I take for granted that there were ever any difficulties for you to do that, because you're one of those guys that have the genetics. You're one of those guys that have the sponsorships. You're one of those guys that have the secret. And the truth is, if I had access to just one of those things, I could look like him. I could be that. What I want to do is I want to take a minute and give the people a picture of what it looked like before you got to this place where you totally believed that you would become what you said you wanted to be. What did that picture look like for you?
When I first picked up the weights, I was 165 pounds at my height, and which you all know it's not a lot of weight. You know, I was cut up, mm-hmm. no muscle. I had a wide frame, but I was thin. My skull, I mean, I had the bodybuilding cheekbones. I just, you know, I wasn't a big individual, but you know, I believed in myself, and it's just, it takes that and doing everything that you need to do and not making excuses to get there. Like, I did my research. I went to, at that time, I took nutrition. I took my personal training course, and I read everything. How do I get big? Oh, well, it says you got to eat 1.5 grams of protein per day and 2 to 3 grams of carbs per body weight. So, you know, I was like, okay, I read it, and I applied it, and it was every day. Every day I would look in the mirror, I looked the same. Yes, I mean, tomorrow, I mean, the next day and stuff like that. But I didn't stop. I just kept. You know, most people don't do that for 2-3 months, then stop, and then take 6 months off. Once I started, I didn't stop. You know, I'm one of those people that's like clockwork. I do everything at the same time every day. And, you know, I just never stopped, and that's it. You know about that. Like, I hear all great stories, and I see it, you know, firsthand. You know, if you were in the gym, we've trained together, and just one thing, you know, we trained, it was like put in that work, a few hours a workout we did together. And, you know, it's like when people talk about overtraining, if you're feeding the machine, you ain't overtraining.
Mm. Now, I know you in particular have had some very interesting controversy when it comes to calories and quality nutrient dense calories versus empty calories. What do you think is the biggest misconception that a lot of the learner athletes and training exercise enthusiasts have about the nutrition game when it comes to how you've been able to build your success?
Well, everything is different for everybody, obviously. Like, and for the most part, we have a lot of similarities, but sometimes you have to find and see what works. As for me, as being an ectomorph, I have to have refeed days. And when I say refeed days, I'm gorging out on food. Then people's like, oh, you're gonna eat like that, you're not gonna look great. I'm like negative percentage, you know, like it works and it actually helps me. Like if I don't do that, like even while doing that, this prep for the Olympia, I had 3 weeks in a row. 1 week I lost 3 pounds and the following week I lost 4. And I was eating on Sundays, like I've been eating like 10 cookies a day. That's like about 10,000 calories, like for my cookie dealer. And I'm like losing this amount of weight per week. And to be honest, it's not like I'm doing how I was in the past doing these crazy workouts. Now I'm actually doing 2 workouts of 45 minutes to 60 minutes. You know, I'm not going crazy. Like I'm not in the gym 3 hours a day because now, you know, running a business, I have to spread my time and bring it to different places. So it's, you know, and I'm losing this weight. I'm like, wow, like it's, you know, it's like, it's something that I have to do and it works for me, but it won't work for everybody.
That is a very interesting thing you just said. So we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to understand or at least digest some of that information you just shared with us. You are the owner of My Cookie Dealer.
Yes, me and my wife.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Something that we created together. We always, so for the last, I would say, few years, we were talking about deciding to open a company. So we were like, we were thinking, what is it that we're going to do? So we knew that as I competed that we couldn't do a supplement line because I'm, you know, sponsored. And by the time, like, as long as it takes, I mean, I could have done it, but sometimes, like, you know, maybe by the time the company grows or becomes something, I'm you know, like I we wouldn't be getting any income. So we needed to make sure that we were getting income and stuff like that. So, you know, we just decided what we're going to do. And this actually just, we started talking about like, all right, let's open up. I love food. So let's open up a restaurant. Everybody knows. So we talked about different stuff. This just happened naturally. And when I said naturally, it was like, she always bakes for me. You know, and people who watch my earlier YouTube videos will see she always bakes for me. So she would bake me these cookies, and then I love to post my cheat meals, my cheat days or whatever. So I would post a picture of the big cookies that she bakes for me. And everybody, like I would get 300-400 DMs. Everybody like, oh my God, these cookies look delicious. Can you give us a recipe? And then people start asking, I'm not giving you the recipe, I don't know it. So they're like, can we buy it? So for like 6 months, I was getting hounded every week when I would post those cookies. So I finally told my wife, like, I mean, I kept telling her throughout the whole time, like, we should, you know, start a cookie company. You know, like people are asking, they, you know, whatever they want it. It's not like we're going to throw this on people like, hey, you know what? They're asking for us to, you know, sell these cookies. I have a friend, he owns a Cardinale Bakery. And he owns a huge bakery. So one thing about my wife, she wasn't going to do this from her kitchen. So he's actually a really close friend of ours. And he said, hey, let's see how it goes. You can use my kitchen. You can, you can make the cookies here and let's see how it goes. Well, that didn't last but like 2 months. We had to buy our own bakery because, all the things that we needed to buy our own facility. And thank God that, you know, for many years, you know, we've been saving our savings instead of spending our money. We've been saving. So we were in the good place to really just invest in our bakery. And that's how that started. You know, it's just something that was a passion, something that she loved to do. And we just, you know, started this company together. And now we have a very successful cookie company.
You know, and that's interesting because we have seen a lot of requests come through praising, you know, the cookies. I've actually seen people that refer to you behind the scenes as, yo, that's the Cookie Monster, my cookie dealer. So shout out to you for actually, you know, making that a reality.
Hey, Menachai, question. How much money do you spend on your mobile bill per month? Go ahead, tell me. Do you know that for $15 a month, if you buy any plan with Mint Mobile, 3-month plan, they'll give you 3 more months for free? That's right. I know you like that. That's why you gave me that. Look, anyway, Menachai, what you can do is you can go on over to mintmobile.com/getting it done. That's mintmobile.com/getting it done. You're looking at me like that because you like what I'm saying to you and you want to take advantage of buying 3 months for $15 and getting 3 more months for free only at Mint Mobile. That's right. Just go on over to mintmobile.com/getting it done. Now, aren't you happy you're my friend?
When you have a concept in your mind, you know, and it is something that is not yet seeable by anybody else on the outside, your bodybuilding career, your success as a professional bodybuilding athlete, and now the success that you're realizing with My Cookie Dealer, your company, can you tell me what the difference is between having a concept in your mind and actually working to see it realized? What do you think would be 3 necessary steps to make that happen, to take a concept from your mind and start to put it into action to allow it to become a physical reality that we can all see and know?
I would say first and probably the most important is sometimes it's just taking that action. Sometimes we all say we're gonna start tomorrow. Sometimes it's just making it happen, doing it. You say you're gonna do it, just jump, blindfolded or whatever, just jump and do it. Don't wait till tomorrow. Tomorrow's not guaranteed. Just go right ahead and, just follow your dream. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. You just got to go out there and, I think to me that's number one. You just got to just take a leap of faith. You know, sometimes many people, they want to do stuff. And I hear people talk about stuff all the time, like, oh, I have this idea, I want to do this. But sometimes it's like, just say, hey, you know what? Like, you know, my wife is my partner and, I could tell you this, we have a lot of other ideas. And the thing is, we actually like, all right, boom, we'll just make a phone call, like, let's go see this. And then we just go and make that happen instead of like sitting there waiting and like, all right, we're going to think about doing this, but this is a possibility in the future. Too many people do that. In life, you need to take chances in order to make things a reality. If you don't take the chance, you don't know if it's going to be something that's going to be successful or not. That's one. But
that's one. That's one. Number two.
Work hard, man. Like, I could tell you this. I mean, with anything that me or my wife does, we work hard. You can't give anything 20%, 50% and expect it to be successful. You gotta work harder than, I could tell you this, my wife, when we started this, I gotta give her so much credit, so much props. As soon as we went and bought the bakery, we already had our idea of what we were gonna do. She's like, all right, in the beginning, we didn't have anybody to help us or watch our daughter. She's like, all right, you finished competing. We got this, now let me do this. And she would go and work at the bakery to like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, just to make people happy. Like, but she put the hours, she put the work in and like, by herself. And I'm like, I'm watching the camera like, you need to come home. It's 3 or 4, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's like, you work harder than what anybody else, not other people that are trying to start a business are going to work to 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and then wake up a few hours later after they, after they got a couple of hours of rest and then back to work. It's like, I could say, we've done a lot of things and we're still very active in the office. We have 45 employees right now, and still we don't need to do anything.
What? Wait. You have 45 employees?
45 employees. Yes.
What? So you make decisions that actually speaks to the life and profitability of 45 employees, 45 other people. Wow, that's my
family, yeah. So
wow.
Like, and but we go there every day, we work every day, and we this stuff, the stuff that we do, we don't have to do. We just do. We like to, you know, I'm a person, I like to work close to, you know, whatever, like with the people that work for me, I treat them like family. I'm like, I sit there and I talk to them and they feel comfortable. I'm not the owner, I'm not the boss. They just, you know, they know, they recognize the, you know, who I am, but it's like we go in there and they have a lot of love and respect. You know, we try to help out and do whatever we can, but it's like, we've built a family and it's like, it's awesome, you know, to go there and, you know, and just feel great going there and not no tension. Everybody's happy, you know, and stuff like that. So it's a good environment.
Great work environment is important. So we got two. We got one, take chances. Two, we've got work hard. Not just working hard, but as you put it so eloquently, be willing to be the hardest working man in the room. I like that one. That's,
I know.
I like that. What's number three?
You said three, so I gotta think of three.
Ah! He said I gotta think of three.
I gotta think of something, you know.
Well,
can I turn the TV on?
While you do that, I know that it's important to say this because a lot of times what happens is I've seen from personal experience when you get a chance, you work really hard, and a lot of the work that happens behind the scenes is a lot of effort that is spent in reinvesting in building, a lot of times just building myself to a place where I know what I said I wanted to do. I know how important it is to me, but then there are times when, because I haven't quite yet achieved the success that I'm working for, it can be very, very difficult at times to even believe that it's possible. Sometimes the doubt can come in and it is exactly what it is, you know, it is the thing that makes the setbacks speak very, very, very loudly, and sometimes even louder than the ability to stay focused. I'm saying this to say that somehow the people that succeed, like yourself, have found a way, I believe, to silence or quell that loud speaking voice that is the doubt and the possible despair. And I would imagine that with saying that, there would be an interesting way to acknowledge that and possibly what can become the answer to what would be number three, you know, and I'm interested to hear how you do it. How have you been able to silence those thoughts of despair and possible, what we call it, discouragement?
Okay, so this is me being 100% honest. Mm-hmm. It's hard, man. It's like even to this day, like you get like these, it happens. It doesn't matter. I don't think as you can become very successful, you're always going to have doubt. Like my thing is like, it runs to me, but I'm like, I've been in my life where I had nothing and I don't ever want to be there again. So I work hard so I can make it possible that I won't be there again. So, you know, you can't take, I don't know. It's like, it happens. You're going to, it's always going to run through your mind. Like, you know, so it drives you to wake up and work hard every day and not get comfortable and not get like, okay, things are good. Let me just chill back and relax. Like, no, like, no matter what, you're always going to be on top of everything. What goes on over here? What goes on over there? And I feel like always going to push. I don't know. Like, I don't think that fear ever goes, you know, at least for me. And, you know, like what you say, I think is all natural. It's a natural feeling.
So your number three is?
Number three is, let's see.
It sounds like I hear you saying always push.
It has to be like, I guess it's probably just to, you always got to keep, you know, pushing, always got, and you always got to just just have that drive, never get comfortable, you know, never get comfortable. I think getting comfortable is a big mistake. I think you always have to work hard no matter what.
Never get comfortable. I like that. A, B, L, E. Never get comfortable. All right. So far we have take chances, number one. Number two, work hard. As you so eloquently put it earlier, be the hardest working man in the room. I really, really, really like that. That resonates really well with me. The third, never get comfortable. Never get comfortable. What do you think a good number four would be based on your personal experience?
My wife says find a good partner.
Find a good partner. Hey, I like that. That's what's up. Hold on, let's put that down. Find a good partner. Now, how do you support that? Find a good partner. Find a good partner. Partner, I like that. Can't write and think at the same damn time. That's me. But finding a good partner, why is that important?
Somebody you can trust, rely on, and when you know you're not there, they're, you know, pushing harder or just as hard as you will, you know, and not, you know, just, I guess trust is very important, you know, somebody that's, you know, is going to be doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know what I mean? I know that you know, you have your own company, you have your own business and stuff like that, and you know that without the right people in the right places, you can have something and it can fold if you don't have the right person, the right partner, you know, on your behalf. Because anything, you know, can just collapse, especially if things are being done wrong and not being monitored and not being just taken care of, you know.
Now, you have been able to find yourself a right partner. You know, the reality is right now, as sure as we're talking about this experience, being able to have a successful career as an athlete and to maintain that while at the same time continuing to develop your entrepreneurial investments, you have the right partner. What do you think was the most important thing that you needed to see in her, your partner? What's a good quality to find or to look for when selecting a partner or identifying somebody that's the right partner for you?
Loyalty, honest, you know, like that's one thing. Like I'm a very loyal individual and she is as well. And some, you know, we're very honest, even if we don't like the conversation, even if we don't like something, like, you know, she might not like that I'm gonna say this, or I might not like that she's gonna say that, we're very honest with each other, regardless of you like it or not. And at the end of the day, it's that communication, you know, it's like you have to have that. So it's like, you know, most people, a lot of relations, they lie to each other. Like they'll go and they'll be like, oh, well, don't tell this person. Like, you can tell my wife, I don't care. She knows and whatever. Like, I don't need to hide anything, you know? It's like, and just being able to have that relationship, like somebody who is your best friend, you know, somebody you want to spend time with. Like I hang out with my wife everywhere I go. And it's not because, oh, she wants to be, no, we just get along. We like being around each other. So it's like, you know, that's my best friend. Like how some people, they have their best friend, which is whatever the case is, a lot of times it's not this, the other half is, you know, that's my best friend and we enjoy our company. So whenever I compete, she's there every show. Whatever we do in life, we do it together. So it's like, and we enjoy our time together, you know? So it's like, it's not something that we force it upon each other. It's not like one is being up the other one's ass and stuff like that. You know, it's like just natural and that's who we are.
So the fifth and final of this list of five, if we were to say the most important qualities a person would want to look for in helping to develop themselves from concept into reality for the increase of success, what would you say that fifth one would be?
Never forget where you came from.
Really? Never forget where you came from.
It defines who you are. It makes you who you are as a person, I guess, right? Like So it's like everything that you've done in life, sometimes it all starts at the beginning, and it's like you, your work in progress, and you know, you build yourself up to be who you are today, but it all comes from, you know, like the, you know, like where you came from, like, you know, sometimes the struggle of being a kid and going through having hard times, it's like makes you like, hey, I never want to be there. I never want my kids to have to go through that. So I want to give them the best life, and you work hard and work hard, and you know what it is to struggle and to, you know, like not have the perfect childhood and just wanna, or whatever the case is, just mm-hmm. wanna grow and become somebody that's stronger and build something. I don't know, but I feel like that's something very important, you know.
Never forget where you came from as golden rule number 5. Ah, I like that. Never forget where you came from. When you say this and you saying that, hey man, these are, let's say, the established golden rules. I want to receive this really, really well, because I've seen for myself, traveling as an athlete that is in the process of, you know, achieving a certain amount of success in your career. I think what happens is, as that athlete that is the successful athlete that represents the success of being where you are and doing what you do and having the privilege to, you know, be your own boss and a real mover and shaker that's able to map out not only a pathway for your success, but to also create opportunity that speaks to the livelihood and success of now more than at least 45 people that are employed by your company. If someone were to say, hey man, well, how did you achieve this success? What are 5 steps, you know, that can help another person possibly realize and develop their own pathway to achieving something, you know, very similar. I think what we're saying right now is the 5 things that we got from this interview is to, 1, not be afraid to take chances. 2, work hard, or as you eloquently put it earlier, be the hardest working man in the room. I love that. Never get too comfortable. Never get comfortable. And the 4th one that we have here is to, 5 is never forget where you come from, but 4 is find a good partner. Man, I'm still looking. Goddamn, I'm looking for a partner. I'm just kidding. I'm looking for a good partner. But I, definitely something to meditate on. I right now, what's going on now? You're getting ready to compete? How do you feel?
3 weeks and probably 3 days. It's been one of the hardest and easiest prep at the same time. And when I say that at the same, you know, sentence, is because this whole pandemic, that's what made it the hardest, was because for the first time in my whole career, when everything happened, I just kind of lived a normal life for 6 months. So I still trained, but I stopped following a regimen of eating. You know, I just ate, you know, like a normal person. You know, if I started focusing on the business, and then I would just, if I wanted to eat something, I ordered. So I didn't bring my food. I wasn't cooking my food. So I went from 296 pounds lean to like 258 when I started my prep. So I actually I've been pulling like a Roni for this prep and growing into the show. I looked at my body and I was like, how am I going to do this? I qualified for I'm doing the Olympia. How am I going to do this? So I usually take my off season and I train like an animal. I was just going through the motions and going to the gym. I wasn't, you know, I didn't even know there was going to, I had no idea it was going to happen. We had no clue. So I was just like, you know, I need to focus on my business right now, especially now that all this is going on, is just focus on that. And then I'll bodybuilding. Now, at the same time, I was enjoying such a good time, like being able to do things with my daughter and not have to worry about, like, I got to go get my second workout in. I got to go do this. You know, so it was like just a lot of family bonding. So it actually felt great to be a normal human being for once. And so when I started my prep, I kind of didn't want to start. I was enjoying being normal because I've gone hard since 2007 and I never took my foot off the gas. So it was just going at 100 and there's 100 miles per hour. I was like a race car. I was going about 180. And then I would just stop and just take, you know, just put that my foot in the brake for 6 months. It was very, very hard. So when I had to start the prep, I was like, all right, I'm gonna start. So I said I was gonna start at 14 weeks. I ended up starting at 12. And then I'm like, you know, it was fun watching my body transform, but every week was like, oh my God, I forgot how sore. Like the first 2 weeks was so hard because I was so sore. I was like, oh my God, I forgot how this feels like. And I used to feel like that every day, but I forgot how that felt because I was going through the motions. Now I was like really training hard. So that was hard, getting my mind back into the game. That made it easy, I guess, with having to run a business and, you know, not like, just because I'm in prep doesn't mean I'm not gonna be at the office now. So having to be at, you know, working out, which now I had to train a little bit earlier so I can get to the office, go to work, and then, you know, then still train a little bit later for my night workout. But that has been able to make my weeks go by quicker. So even though we're 3 weeks out, I felt like I just started my prep yesterday. So normally, like, when you're on the countdown and like, all right, I have 5 weeks out, well, I'm not so focused on the weeks, you know? And so it's easy in that point, but it hasn't been easy. It's been hard. Like, my body's felt it. Like, you know, I've been feeling the, you know, I felt, because I've been growing into the show. So oh my God, it's been taxing. But that's one thing I do love is training. So it's not to me, that's not hard. I love working out. You know, I'm always going to work out for the rest of my life. So,
do you feel like you're the time that it takes for you to train? Are you just as excited about training the same way today as you were, let's say, 3 years ago?
I am, and I'm not. Like, I'm excited to train that first workout. I like it. I love it. Now I feel like the second workout, which I always love, is more of a chore. So it's like, but once I get into it, I feel good. But sometimes, like, knowing, like, all right, I'm just hanging out with my daughter, Isabella. We're hanging out, whatever. And I'm like, all right, babe, I got to go work out now, okay? And she's like, Daddy, a lot of times she'll come downstairs. I do my second workout in my home gym. I build a gym in my basement. So it's actually pretty cool. So I don't have to, I go to Bev's in the morning, and then that way I don't have to drive to Bev's twice. I work out in my basement in the second workout. So she'll come downstairs and hang out, you know, and stuff like that. But now that we've been getting closer, I have to get a little more serious. So my wife will, you know, stay with her and stuff like that. That way I can just focus a little more.
Well, we think about training intensity and where you were at 25, just turned pro, you're excited. You've seen, you know, your goal change from something that was a concept in your head to a reality. You have your pro card and you were excited to do the work then to make it worth something, to actually go and get the job done. Now you're on the other side of this experience where you are now an accomplished professional bodybuilder and, you know, a self-employed, you know, entrepreneur. Still with the responsibilities of raising your daughters, your family. Training intensity today, how are you able to get into the right space mentally to train? And is it the same intensity that you were able to conjure when you were 25 and freshly a new pro on the scene?
It's not the same. Mm-hmm. And I want it to be the same. I used to train very, very heavy, as hard as I could. I would beat myself up, and to me that was like the only way I had to train. Mm-hmm. Now I train a smarter way, and that's because I guess after many years of training like that, your joints start taking a a beat down. So now my, like, I can't handle going as heavy, or at least for every workout. I have to, if I want to go heavy on the body part, I probably have to do it once every 2 weeks, and it takes me about 2 weeks to recover on my joints. My muscles are fine, but my joints take a while to recover because I, like, I abused them. I think I abused them way too much with the heavy weights, and, you know, so now it's like, as much as I want to, and I, like, I go to the gym and I want to grab the weight, because to me, like, I just always love to push heavy weights. It's just, you know, if I grab something too heavy for, you know, it's my, like, elbow starts hurting all the way down to my shoulders. So I have to, like, now I'm working more in concentrating. I've been working with Chris on this prep and just concentrating and squeezing the muscle more. So not as heavy, but it's still as effective. That's one thing I've noticed, is just as effective, because now we're making, instead of pressing 200-pound dumbbells, we're taking 100, and we're making it like they were 200, but now there's not taxing your joints or your muscles. So it's like squeezing negatives nice and slow. You know, positives, we can push hard and fast, but then you come, you hold it for a couple of seconds and you come back down nice and slow. So I've learned that to be very effective. It hurts a lot. It's not like the, and it requires a lot of patience. Somebody like throw the weights around and move and get a set done in 10 seconds. Now that set's going to take you about 2 minutes.
Question. So when you say that, then you're saying your training has improved today versus where it was, let's say, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I would say so, because it's smarter. You know, sometimes we wish we can go and we could teach ourselves. I won't stop the heavy weight, but I would teach myself to not probably push as heavy all the time. So that way my joints wouldn't be as bad as they are now.
Joint mileage. You know, it's funny because I remember being a younger bodybuilder in the gym, you know, as a teenager, and hearing the older guys that would come into the gym locker room with the smell, the epithium of Tiger Balm and Muscle Rub, and I remember amidst this cloud of Muscle Rub and Tiger Balm in the locker room, as I kind of make my way in very quickly to change my clothes and get ready to go out on the gym floor and train like a beast, I remember hearing the older guys tell me, "Hey, young guy, young man, young bodybuilder, you might want to slow down on some of that heavy weight." They would say, "Hey, you know, you want to take care of your joints." I thought that when I heard them say these things, I thought, wow, you know, these guys were just not nearly as strong as I was, you know, and could never have been as strong as I was. So the things that they were saying to me applied to someone that was not who I was. And fast forward, it wasn't until I kind of found myself with injuries or having to nurse you know, joints, as I hear you talking about right now, that I learned the hard way that I need to be more mindful of those things in order to continue to have the opportunity to train as long as I wanted to and experience a career as long as I would like to have it. I'm saying this to say that I learned the hard way that usually I had to get hurt or spend a lot of years, you know, training poorly before I could learn that I needed to develop a better way to train smart or train better, to speak to that longevity. And I hear you saying that you got that experience, but with that, are there any injuries other than just some joint pain that you were aware of? Not to say you have to say anything in particular, but have you had the experience of having had an injury and having to recover in an effort to help, you know, develop a better way to train, that smart approach?
I've never had anything serious, but the joint pains have been serious enough to, like, you know, like, feel it and you like, oh man, and it hurting, especially when you like love pushing, like, you know, I could tell you like this, I love doing chest and grabbing the heaviest dumbbells in the room and just pushing them to the max. And then, you know, when it started to, like, let's say my shoulder bothered me, like the shoulder joints and the elbows, and then knowing that, like, last week I just did 15 reps and then now I grabbed them and I can even get it up because I'm in so much pain. So I got to wait 2 weeks before I do it again. And then it's like just that addiction of trying to keep doing it. And then I would never heal because I was addicted to keep pushing those weights. I had to, like, train myself, like, you know what? stop, chill. leave them alone. So now I want to touch them. I'll do it like every other month. And then I'm doing no pain. Okay, I'm good. And I got to keep it like that. Because if I keep going, then you get back into like, all right, well, I did 8. Now we're going to do 10 next week and then or the next workout. So it's like, I just realized that, especially now, I feel like this year, my chest is going to probably be the biggest it's been. And I haven't pushed anything past. I mean, I touched the heavier weight, like I said, every other month. But I'm doing 100-pound dumbbells, just really, really slow and negatives. And it's working. And, you know, the development is there. So it's like when you start realizing, I love lifting heavy. So I'm not going to say I wouldn't if I could. If my joints were feeling 100%, I would go back to it. But it's like the pain that I feel after that and just this information and having it for like 2 weeks. Sorry about that. Having it for like 2 weeks and then having my I have a guy that comes every week to work on me and then having to like go through all that pain. I'm like, it's not worth it, you know, especially when you want to look your best at a certain show. And then if you have some like a shoulder pain and you can't pose correctly because of the pain and the inflammation.
What's the difference between why you were competing when you were pre-25 and why you're competing now? Has that changed at all?
Yes. 25, I competed. I had a dream. I wanted to be a professional. I wanted to be successful. I just knew that I can do it. Now, different, very different. Now I just, you know what? I accomplished so much in bodybuilding. Meaning when I say that, I wanted to win the New York Pro. I won it. I wanted to win an Arnold. That was my accomplishment. I was like, I just wanted to win an Arnold. I won the Arnold Brazil last year. I felt like I accomplished everything I wanted to in bodybuilding. So why am I still competing? I love bodybuilding. And I guess, wow, it's hard. I could say this. I don't know if I'm going to be doing this much longer because now I kind of just, as much as I love it and I wish I could, I want to raise my daughter. I want to be there for school trips. I want to be able to do it. I don't want to keep saying, no, I have to get ready. I have to do this. If it wasn't for my 4-year-old, I'd probably be doing this for as long as I possibly can. But, you know, it's like, I might have another 2 years left, you know, maybe, give or take, I don't know, we'll find out. But I guess my reason now is just because I love it, you know? I mean, I really feel like I accomplished at that time. I feel like I needed accomplishments. I love it. I love the discipline. I love the eating. I love the, I love the sport, you know? I love bodybuilding. So it's something that is going to be with me for the rest of my life. And, you know, it's just like you, I love it. You know, even though you're not currently competing, you love it. You still look like you. And now that I'm, you know, it's like, that's one of the things, like, I know when I stop and I retire, I always want to look great. You know, I don't want to, like, somebody see me and they're like, oh my God, like, you know, he doesn't even look like I'm a bodybuilder. I love it. And it's always going to be part of me.
What is that? When we say, I love it, I love bodybuilding. There was a time when I said, I love bodybuilding. And I was very clear. I thought about what I meant when I said that. I love bodybuilding. There was a time when I would have stood on a mountaintop and said, yo, bodybuilding saved my life. And I said it with such conviction. And even to this day, there's a part of me that really does still identify very, very clearly with the reason and the value that it represented for me. But when I start to break that down and try to itemize what that is, I realize that there's so many other words that I would use, you know, that when you start to read those words, it might give a whole different view on what somebody might have thought bodybuilding is. I want to ask you right now, what is it? What is that thing about bodybuilding that you love when you say, I love bodybuilding? What is it? What are those words that it starts to you know, break down and explain, you know, in this idea of bodybuilding. What is that to you?
Okay. Well, I'm going to just give you, for me, like the key things. For me, it's brought a lot of discipline to my life, you know, like structurally do things and, you know, just that discipline, I love it. Two, I love to train. I love working out. It makes me feel good. Body training makes me feel good. And just following the bodybuilding lifestyle makes me feel good. Like, I just feel great. I feel good. As opposed to, remember, you know, like when I wasn't bodybuilding, and if, you know, like for the 90% of the time, you eat whatever you want in your body, whatever, you don't feel great. But then you don't know that you don't feel good. But when you actually start to follow a bodybuilding routine, a bodybuilding diet, you know, you feel good. You know, it feels great. And people say, oh, well, you eat whatever you want. I eat clean. And, you know, for the most part, I eat whatever I want. You know, I have my cheat days, you know, and stuff like that. But I eat good for the most part, you know. So it's like, I like eating clean. I like rice. I like chicken. I like steak. Mm-hmm. You know, that's food that I love and I can eat every day, all day long. Mm-hmm. It's just the willpower, the mind, what we have to do. It's just, it takes a lot. And I love to be able to just be that person, to be able to have that strong mind, to be able to, you know, make things happen, stuff, you know, that we visualize, we want our bodies to look a certain way, and we go there and we just, you know, we make it happen. It's just, I don't know, it's, you know, bodybuilding, like you said, changed your life. It's changed my life. It's saved my life. Like you have, like, you know, it's made me a different person. It showed me structure, it showed me respect. It showed me a lot of different things that without bodybuilding, I wouldn't be who I am today.
If you were able to go back now and have a conversation with the perspective and insight that you have now as the accomplished, successful athlete that's able to be to realize the success not only on the stage, but now also with taking that success into your private life and use that to, you know, pilot the helm of being a responsible father, your family, the things that you're able to do today. If you could go back to have a conversation with yourself, the aspiring athlete, the up and coming bodybuilder, pre-25, what is the most valuable thing that you think you would tell yourself?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I think maybe I will let myself make the mistakes I made, because I think that probably made me where I am, put me where I am and made me who I am. You know, sometimes you got to make the mistakes. You got to fall in order to get up, you know? So it's like, sometimes I think I probably wouldn't have said anything. Probably, you know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like sometimes we have to go through those things in life in order to, you know, maybe the only thing I would tell myself is train smarter in the beginning. And I would go into the gym, and I remember I didn't warm up. I was strong, but my legs were really strong in the beginning, and I would squat 405 pounds and start squatting. People were like, are you crazy? I was like, why are you not wrapping your knees? Like, you need to warm up. And I'm like, I don't need to warm up. I was like, I can do this. Now, like, I can't even warm up with a plate. I need to warm up with the ball, free weight squats.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I know it. I know it. I totally agree with you. And I would tell myself to do leg extensions first. I got to do leg extensions and the step mill before I get out on the floor and think I'm going to start squatting. So I'm a totally piggyback on what you just said. We're here now. And as you said, we're 2 weeks out from a very big event, experiencing your competitive career. What's next?
What do you mean, like after Olympia?
On the other side, yes, sir.
Well, I want to focus on having fun with business. I want to keep investing into other businesses and just, you know, working on the cookies. I love, is we're passionate about that, but just, you know, we just want to just keep, you know, seeing how far we can grow and how far we can take, you know, just invest in other companies and doing different things. You know, it's just always pushing yourself and see your limits. I don't know.
Do you think in the heart and mind of every professional bodybuilder, just looking at this from your experience to date, do you think the entrepreneurial mindset that is something that everybody has in common, or is it just something that by chance you discovered you have to develop?
I think it's not something that we all have in common. I think some of us have it, some of us don't. You see it when you talk to other individuals, you know. Some, I know that from the very beginning, as me getting sponsored with, I always, you know, like when I got a contract, I read it, I went back and forth with my lawyers, I made demands, you know. It's like, so I see a lot of athletes, they throw them something and they just take it, you know, and they don't want to fight for, you know, something that they don't sometimes believe that they're worth. And, you know, I feel like as an athlete from the very beginning, I always, like, you know, like I valued myself. I'm like, you know what, I need this, I need that. And it's not that I was better than anybody, because they feel like they can do that and probably even more than I was able to get. But I just knew that, like, as an athlete, you're not going to have me 4 weeks out from a show going into traveling and this. I was like, after 4 weeks, I'm not traveling. I'm going to focus. I know myself. I work better when I'm in my home gym, like, you know, Bev's and just whatever, and just doing what I have to do, but in my routine. When I fall out of routine, I don't have the same, my mind is not in the same place. So I needed to, like, put my guidelines, whatever it is. I didn't accept anything less than I was worth. You know, I was just like, all right, this is what I want to take. This is whatever. And I stood my ground, whether it worked out or didn't. I stood my ground. And I feel like many athletes don't do that, you know. And I just, even, I remember, I did coaching for many years and I was very successful at that, but I worked hard. I would leave the gym after I finished training from, you know, and I would go to sleep sometimes like at midnight, or even wake up to answer emails. I would always be answering emails. I had over 100 and something clients and I was working around the clock. I bodybuilt and answered clients. I had one show where I won the Toronto Pro and I had 24 clients competing on the same day that I competed. And I answered every single email, and I still won the Toronto Pro. And I answered every client. I would get up, answer emails, put the dice together, do this, do that, FaceTime, whatever. Go back, took a nap, got up, answered emails, and got on stage. And I had two that competed the same show as me. And every single 25 client placed in the top five.
So obviously you had to develop the command of some very keen skill sets in order to do that, because that is very impressive. Very, very impressive. You know, my hat is off to you, because I've seen where it's very difficult. It's been very difficult for me to focus on myself getting ready to be the best.
You were like fighting for the title. You had, maybe if I was fighting for the title, I'd probably be like, hey, listen, guys, you know. But, you know, you're on a whole different level, Kai. So it's like, I wish that I could have, you know, like, I've never got, like, I accomplished what I wanted to, but I never had a chance to fight for the Olympia title. You know, like, you're going down in history as one of the best bodybuilders in the world.
Ah, true. You're still fighting for the title. Are you kidding me? You still have 2 weeks. And that's, let's not get it twisted. I think the sport has actually come to a very interesting place right now. You know, as you were talking about dealing with the pandemic and things that are on the, you know, that are obviously having their way of helping to shape some of the obstacles that we're competing against with even having the show at all. But, you know, man, there's a tremendous opportunity, a lot of people would say, with respect to, you know, just how things have turned up. You know, I think now is a time where every athlete in this game, you know, that's on stage and has certainly earned their right to be there, you know, is, you know, should be working with the expectation
to be able to bring their best and show their best. And dude, you have the goods. You have the goods, and definitely with everything that you've been able to present thus far, you have the mind, the mindset that has been required. Your accomplishments are tremendous, you know, and with being able to do everything that you've done, there was a time when you and I both know where to be turntable, to be able to turn pro meant that you had to come in and be the best. You had to come in and show the goods, you know, and you did it at a time when that was still the requirement. Things have changed a lot since then, but the reality is when you came through and you went, won your pro card, you did it, you know, when it still really, really, really was a very difficult thing to do. And when it happened, it was a testament to the fact that you worked hard, you focused, and you did what you had to do to overcome. And you got it done. So you get my salute. And I'm very, very privileged and fortunate to have been able to have this interview and exchange with you today. This is like one of those things where I feel like it's come full circle. I've gotten a chance to see you not only, you know, as a fellow athlete in the gym, you know, and an amazing looking physique from across the room. Who is that? New guy. He's coming in. He's trying to take my food. Gonna take my lunch, damn it. You know, but then also I've gotten the privilege to get a chance to know you and befriend you and get a chance to see you and your wife grow. And dude, this is tremendous. The fact that you've been able to grow your success to this place where you are your own boss, entrepreneur, businessman, running a successful enterprise and still developing, man, that's noteworthy. And I can afford to say in this moment, and I respect your accomplishments a great deal and what it's taken for you personally to grow to a place where you've been able to make your vision of success a reality. This is awesome for me. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to have this meeting, this exchange. And we're going to have to do something else. I mean, because I also know that you're an artist, and a lot of people didn't get a chance to see those things about you just yet. And one of the things I would definitely like to have done would have been to highlight that a little bit. I think that's still a stone that has still not yet been turned over for you. And it'll be very interesting to see how that, you know, shapes some of the things that continue to blossom for you on this side of it. You know, the business success is amazing because I think it becomes the breakout point for a lot of us as athletes, you know, making the transition, you know, seeing our success realized on stage. And then for a lot of us, that's the turning point, you know, to recognize, oh, snap, wait a minute, you mean I really do have say over what I can become? Because the success on the stage is almost impossible until we do it. And then once we start to do it and it's happening, you know, I built the chest, I built the arms, I'm Vaughn Diesel. I am Diesel. I'm not the little guy saying, yo, I want to get bigger. I now am that guy, you know, and I can turn that into a sword and wield it any way I choose. It's a power that I've certainly been able to make a successful career out of as an athlete. And now, as a businessman, partnered up with your wife, my hat's off to you, brother. Salute.
Thank you. To do something else. We talk, and after Olympia, you know, you let me know. Even if I got to take a trip down there to, you know, Brooklyn, and you know, whatever. So, you know, many things. You know, whatever you need, I'm here. You know, we here to support each other. I look up to you. You accomplished so much.
Taking chances. I like it. That that list for anyone that's listening, you know, Juan Diesel's list of how to tap into your own success and create it. First one we had up was taking chances. Don't be afraid to take chances. And the next one, number two, work hard. Juan Diesel said, I'm going to be the hardest working man in the room, and I'm not afraid to do it.
That's a motivational word of encouragement for you. But if you haven't heard it yet, you heard it here first. And never get comfortable. A lot of times people will get content and they fall short and they just stop doing what they used to do when they were trying to cross T's and dot I's, when they were hungry. You know, I love that one. And to find a good partner. In this case, you found a great partner. Mm-hmm. And last and not least, never forget where you come from. That is what's up. Words of wisdom and encouragement from Juan Diesel himself, AKA Mr. Getting It Happening over here. I can't even try to word that. That's like, those five are something that definitely need to be forgotten. So on that note, brother, Minica is looking at me and he is saying, you know what? Before he slaps me in front of everybody here and makes me look like a fool, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. We have something else to do. We're going to do it certainly on the other side of the O. It'll be funny when we talk about it, because technically taking chances is what you're going to have to do, bro. Because a pie in the face comes with the job of entertainment. But yeah, man, I thank you for giving me this opportunity today, brother. And I won't take up any more of your time. Thanks again, man. We're going to get this edited and uploaded. Miss Crystal, how you feeling?
That was fantastic. I loved it. It was amazing. So,
Juan, you made everybody happy over here.
Not too important.
Redeeming. This is why we got to keep working together, brother, because you lit this thing up over here. Very, very thankful. Wait, before you go, can you see? Before you got on, this is an ink drawing. Wow. I know one thing we didn't cover on here was that Juan actually, you know, had an opportunity to work with a comic book company, you know, years back as an artist. You know, real talk, this is not a joke. Every time I do anything now, I do stop and I think about that. You have influenced me and encouraged me to really, you know, think very, very deeply at how I am, things that I'm doing now to continue to shape my steps forward, you know, are influenced in a great deal from some of the conversations that I had with you earlier on, years back when we were at the counter, you know, at Bev's. I mean, real talk, man, there was some stuff that we talked about then that for me still feel unfinished. And every time that I've, you know, in my space, even today, working on some of the stuff that I'm working on right now, I want you to know, just, you know, quiet as kept, off camera, whatever. The point that I'm trying to make is, dude, man, I really respect you a great deal. I respect your journey. And some of the stuff that you told me still stays with me today and influences me in ways that really help me reach a little deeper and aim a little higher. And if you didn't know, I definitely want to tell you this. So you've heard it from me, and it's not just a Instagram, something that I type to you on Instagram. I'm like, yo, did Kai even really write this? Or does Kai really, real talk? This is, you know, so I thank you very, very, very honestly.
And he's a lot. I do have a lot of respect for you. I always said it, I'm honest, you know, and it's like, you know, your work is amazing. You're, you know, that's, honesty means a lot.
Respect. Means a lot to me. All right, Crystal, I guess we're gonna get this next part rolling.
All right.
Minica, say bye. Bye. All right, sit down, man. Stop. All right. Hey, Blacks. Leave your boy a review. That's right. Check me out on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you leave a comment. Say something nice. Say something not nice. Well, you definitely want to be responsible with what to say, because it's your responsibility to use your power wisely. Anyway, but make sure you leave a comment. I'm going to make sure that I read all the comments, questions and concerns. Getting it done with your boy, K with the AKA, Mr. Getting It Done. Until next time, let's keep it positive. Let's keep encouraging each other. Peace.